When the UFC announced that they'd be returning to the Northeast for the first time in over 2 years, fans in this area were expectedly very excited. Thoughts of Chuck Liddell against Wanderlei Silva, a potential Randy Couture title defense, so many thoughts went through their minds. And then the announcement was made. Rashad Evans versus Michael Bisping. And a lot of fans were a little upset about this decision, calling it maybe a glorified Spike TV event. Well, we're 5 days away from UFC 78, and the dust has settled on all the scrutiny and all the Monday morning quarterbacking, if you will. So we've invited BloodyElbow.com's Luke Thomas to break it all down for us, one of the best MMA sites and writers around. And we wanted to talk to Luke about UFC 78 and ask him, and we'll start off with that, after all the hysteria and all the controversies surround the announcement of the main event for this Saturday night's card, as things have died down now and you're looking at it, are you a little more excited about UFC 78 than you might have first have been when it was announced?
I can confess to having a little bit more excitement. I think though that part of that is maybe the natural buildup that people get, the suspense and all the marketing comes to a head right before a major event, even if it's mediocre or not. I mean, you get the kind of amped fanboys and hardcores doing the same thing for a Shooto event that they won't even see until 2 days later. So I'll confess that I'm slightly more excited, and I'll also confess that the card is a little bit better than I think people are giving it credit. If you go through the breakdown of the fights, there's a lot of big fights and interesting fights that aren't getting a lot of press, most notably, I think, in my view, Frankie Edgar, Spencer Fisher is a big one, as well as, I would say, Tamdan McCrory taking on Akihiro Gono. That's huge. It's very, very huge. It's not getting a lot of play. So in that respect, I think it's a great event. The downside is that if you look at the card, there's two things wrong with it. One, it doesn't really have a real main event. It doesn't have superstar main event. And the second problem is that the way the UFC is spinning the main event, they're trying to make a main event out of something that's not, i.e., in this case, Bisping versus Evans. The problem with that fight is that the hyperbole to which Dana White has extended himself by saying the winner is top five, I mean, that's not even on planet Earth logic. I mean, it's totally, totally wrong. But even maybe top five within the actual UFC roster, but in any kind of real terms, about 205 on the planet. I mean, that's just wildly off the mark. So good event, but with several significant holes.
Yeah, and we'll break down the card in just a second. But I wanted to actually ask you about Dana White's comments. He reiterated them yesterday, saying that the winner of this bout would be entered into the top five of the light heavyweight division. Let's look at Rashad and Michael Bisping separately. Where would you rank these two guys right now? I mean, obviously a win against each other, I mean, let's be real, it won't propel them that much. But where would you even put them in the top 10?
Evans could maybe make a claim to the top 10. Maybe. It depends on, rankings are so, I will say, subjective. If you look at rankings from a boxing perspective, which I think is the most close relative to use in terms of a ranking system, in other words, the overlap for and reasons why you rank fighters as you do in boxing, I think, has a lot of play in MMA as well. To that extent, you can kind of make a case for Rashad at number 10. But that being said, his loss to Tito, in my book, it was a loss. I mean, granted, it was a draw, but look, I mean, he lost the fight. If that had gone to the judges' scorecard about Tito grabbing the fence, and granted, that was significant. But in terms of actual who had the sort of the mental upper edge at the end, you got to get that to Tito Ortiz. As far as Bisping, no. I mean, he's not even top 15 or 20. Look, who has he beat? Josh Haynes? Barely beat Matt Hamill. The guy, it can't even hear his corner. This propels you to top five. Since when? You have to beat somebody in the top five to be in the top five. Or you have to beat a lot of top 10 guys. I mean, this is ludicrous. And moreover, you know, they're pitching it as the first time that two Ultimate Fighter winners have fought each other. Well, what does that mean? I don't even know how is that significant in any kind of way that impacts mixed martial arts? I mean, it's kind of cool for reality television, but that doesn't mean anything for the sport itself. You know, granted, you have to understand what Dana White is doing. He's trying to sell his product, and you can't fault the guy for that. But that doesn't mean we have to believe everything he's saying. And to suggest that this is a top five makings match, I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah, and that said, like I said at the top, when they announced that they were coming back to the Northeast for the first time and since October 2005 for UFC 55, I really thought that they were going to, you know, call this one stacked. I mean, I know that term was used in July, but really break out the big guns and have some names. And you have, you know, Chuck Liddell, Wanderlei Silva kind of sharing the spotlight with Matt Serra and Matt Hughes in December. I really thought that they would have at least two quality, like big time events that could main event any other card. Did you share that thinking? I mean, how disappointing was it within the UFC offices that they really couldn't come up with this? Because this was definitely something thrown together at the last minute. No one thought that these two guys would be facing each other, especially coming off their last fight.
Yeah, I mean, we also have to hand it to Joe Silva. Sometimes his matchmaking is a little bit more advanced in terms of how good the fights are than I think people give them credit. I think a lot of times after fights happen, most people say, "Wow, that was actually a decent matchup," and so the fight fights can be more compelling than people think. I think the Bisping Evans fight will be compelling. To your point, I think they tried. I think they tried to get Tito. I think they tried to get Dan Henderson. They want to keep Rampage active, so they're sort of stuck in between injuries and contract disputes and trying to expand content and trying to expand geographical areas of production. They just came up short this time. I don't think it was anything willful against the East Coast, although I will say that the East Coast is deeply underserved in terms of having top-level MMA shown to them. I mean, IFL puts on a number of shows on the East Coast, but really, we don't really get – I'm in Washington, D.C. We don't really get that much A-level fighting out here, and I think it's a mistake. You have a ton of academies out here and a ton of people who are very interested in it. It's not California, but it doesn't have to be in order to be a viable area to market to fans. So I think they tried, but between everything that's going on, this one didn't work out. That being said, though, sort of look at the broader perspective. I think Dana White would say, "Well, look, I'm making up for this with UFC 79, UFC 79," and that's the reasonable point, I think.
Are we pretty much in agreement that Bisping lost his fight to Matt Hamill? Really, I mean, regardless of what the judges had on their score sheets.
Yeah, and even if he didn't win, who cares? So you beat Matt Hamill. Like, what does that prove? It proves very, very little. This is a guy who was expected to get pistol whipped. This is a guy who is deaf, that's a very significant disadvantage, although he's performed athletically well up until then, but still, in a fight and hearing your corner is no small matter, and hearing all kinds of other things going on, it's a disadvantage. He's a disabled fighter in that respect, and moreover, who has he beaten? Nobody. This is a guy who apparently couldn't strike a match, if you listen to what Bisping had to say. I mean, he should have been waltzing over Michael Bisping, excuse me, Matt Hamill, and he didn't. He got pummeled badly. He can make the case, well, who wins, the guy who's the more active point striker or the guy who lands the heavier bombs? I tend to go with the guy who lands the heavier bombs, and even if you want to grant the third round to Bisping, and the second round being kind of close, even then, Michael Bisping was backing up the entire time, striking off the back of his heels, which means he probably had zero power on it. In my view, and I think the view of many other people who booked on that fight in detail, it's really, really, really hard to score that fight for Michael Bisping. At the best case scenario, it's a draw.
You know, reading FightOpinion.com, Zach Arnold, he brought up an interesting point today, saying that Bisping and Rashad Evans, coming off the reality show, they're not guaranteed to make a lot of money, 18 to 20,000 a fight in that ballpark range. Is this actually brilliant on Dana White's part to put two guys like this? You know, you're probably going to get 350,000 buys, something like that. Hopefully for them, it would be that would be the lowest that they would get. And then you're paying these guys not that much, and obviously not at the level of a Chuck or a Vanderlei or a Randy. Is this actually brilliant at how much money he could actually make off this event?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. Ticket sales wise, they're doing very, very well. Again, it's an underserved community, and the logic is sort of like, well, if the UFC comes to town, you kind of have to go. It's like your favorite band. They may have been touring for 40 years, but if they come, it's not the show it once was, but at least it's something. And I think that they're going to benefit from that. In terms of pay-per-view buys, though, I think the jury is out. I don't know that they're really going to be able to sell this one. I mean, yeah, it's two guys from the reality show, but it's not a champion, and it's not a really big, big name. And I think if the pay-per-view buys come back not so significant, that should be a bit of a wake-up call for the UFC. So my answer to that is the jury is still out. In terms of payment for them, who knows what kind of bonus compensation the UFC is providing them. Their system is it lacks such transparency. It's really hard to say if they're being underpaid. And so the UFC is working on some kind of Walmart model where they'll shuffle guys in and shuffle them out and not pay them much. I think the more appropriate point is that this is a setup match for Rampage because they've got to keep them active. They've got something really special in that guy, and they need to keep him in front of fans, defending his belt and promoting the UFC. And this is a good way to at least give him another fight, particularly a fight that no matter who wins, he should be able to defeat either of these two guys.
All right, so Bisping and Rashad Evans, what's your prediction this Saturday?
I think provided that there isn't some sort of miraculous change in Michael Bisping's life, he should get smashed here. I don't see how he can possibly defeat Rashad Evans. Matt Hamill is a more credentialed wrestler than Rashad Evans. But Rashad Evans, I think his wrestling translates much better in MMA because he knows how to use it more effectively. His timing is better. He incorporates it better with his strikes. He incorporates it better with all kinds of different cage tactics. I won't go into the nuances here, but he has a, you know, just because you are Dan Gable doesn't mean you're Dan Gable in MMA. And Rashad Evans is an excellent MMA wrestler and knows how to use big slams when he can, and not the best guard passer, not the best submission guy, doesn't need to be. Heavy-handed, as we've seen, his strikes are great, so I wouldn't even give Bisping the advantage there. Bisping is aggressive, but Bisping's chin is also suspect, and I definitely think Rashad Evans can tap it. I think Rashad Evans can win anyway here but submission, so I'd be highly surprised if Rashad Evans lost.
All right, the other
now,
big...
Bisping cannot win every day. Evans can win anyway he wants, right. Minus submission.
The other big fight that the UFC is pushing is Houston Alexander going up against Thiago Silva. Two guys that obviously aren't probably not in the top 10 right now in terms of the light heavyweight division in the UFC, let alone, you know, the entire MMA world. But Houston Alexander, his last two fights against Jardine and Sakara, I mean, guns blazing, first round knockouts, unbelievable stuff. Is he for real?
I couldn't tell you. And anybody who says they can tell you probably doesn't know what they're talking about. The fact of the matter is, as much as people wish to proclaim that he is the real deal, if you're asking the question, the fact is you don't know. I know Joe Rogan said that much after his second win. Here's what we know about Houston Alexander. He is extraordinarily powerful, a vicious, vicious, dirty boxer. Good clinch, not only in terms of unloading punishment inside the clinch, but also in terms of controlling and off-balancing his opponents. Actually, he's pretty good there, which is surprising. In terms of what he can do going to later rounds, couldn't tell you. In terms of his guard, couldn't tell you. In terms of his wrestling, couldn't tell you. I have no idea how good he is in those respects because we haven't seen anybody who's put him to the test in that respect. You know, Keith Jardine would have been a good test, I think, had he known what he was up against, but he didn't, and obviously he got slept. So we know that he has vicious, vicious KO power. But more importantly, everyone has seen how big he is. Houston Alexander, he's got this guy is ripped to shreds. Now, a lot of muscles require what? A lot of oxygen. And I'm not sure that you can deliver bombs like that in the third round, particularly if you've got a guy who's been playing the sort of pummeling game inside the fence that a Greco-Roman wrestler would do to really wear you out. So I don't know. I think he has the potential to KO anybody, but until I see him fight in the second or third round, I don't know what to tell.
His opponent, Thiago Silva, is 2-0 in the UFC thus far, 11-0 in his career. What kind of a chance are you giving Silva to defeat Alexander this Saturday?
I would say 50% or better. The odds are going to give slight favoritism to Houston Alexander, and I think that's fair. I can live with that. In my view, though, I don't know that Thiago Silva will win. Believe me, it would not surprise me in the least if he decided to just drop all strategy and stand right in front of Alexander and bang it out. The guys from Shoot the Box, and for folks who don't know at home, you know, Shooterbox has the most legendary sparring sessions probably in all of MMA, even more so than Pat Miletich's Wednesday night fights. And on top of that, they're known for sparring bare knuckle. I mean, these are not your sort of typical guys. Would it surprise me if Alexander could bait him into doing that? No, it wouldn't. But if he comes out charging him and Silva is the much more patient game planner, he uses kicks and just keeps Alexander off of him, I definitely give him the advantage. He fought Thomas Duval. Duval is a much different kind of striker. Duval throws the big hooks and fights on the outside, not a big kind of inside guy. And so if you have decent defense and you have good timing, you can sort of wear a guy down like that. Silva's got a good chin, black belt in jiu-jitsu. He has all the makings of somebody who could possibly take Alexander to the later rounds. I give the slight, slight edge to Silva with the stipulation that if he just decides to go back to his old ways, then it'll be Alexander's night pretty early.
All right, a lot of hardcore fans are really looking forward to Rio Chonin making his debut in the UFC, going up against Carl Parisian. I guess the first thing that jumps out at me when I look at this matchup is, why is Chonin fighting in the welterweight division? Here's a guy who has a win over Anderson Silva, has pretty much fought in the 185 division while he was in Pride over in Japan. Do you have any reasoning as to why he is now moving down to 170?
Yeah, a lot of the Japanese guys are doing that. In fact, another guy on the card is Akihiro Gono. He is also dropping down to welterweight. The problem with the guys in Pride are they the American the strength of American MMA, largely, I think, in many ways, comes from the wrestling background. The wrestling world did a whole lot for this sport, not only worldwide, but particularly in America. And when the Japanese guys here, they have the difficulty coming in and handling the strength and control of American wrestlers, a lot of times because of the skill set, but also because they're bigger guys. You know, you go to a high school wrestling meet, and look at the guys who are wrestling at 167 pounds. I mean, they're monsters. They're huge guys. And I think the Japanese sort of caught wind of that finally. And moreover, I think Chonin has fought at a lower weight in Shuto before, so this is not exactly a huge dramatic shift for him. And I think he needs to. Kaoru is freakishly strong. It doesn't look like it, but he's very strong. And I just don't think that, besides his, you know, his incredible, but what I would call flukish win over Anderson Silva, 170 is a much better matchup for him.
The last time we saw Carl Parisian, he was defeating Josh Berkman on the undercard of the Gonzaga Couture bout in August. And his name obviously seems to get lost in the welterweight discussion, probably not in the top five right now. If he beats Rio Chonin, where would you place him? I mean, is this a guy who deserves a title shot soon? Or, I mean, does he have to wait in terms of those other guys to see how everything falls out, GSP, John Fitch, etc.?
Yeah, I don't know what this win really does for him. It's an interesting matchup, and it's a fun fight, and it's a great fight, and I'm glad to see Rio Chonin getting attention. For those who don't know, this is a guy who has his own team over in Japan, but also trains with Team Quest Temecula here in the States, which is like Dan Anderson, Sean Tompkins, a lot of those are formerly Sean Tompkins, but a lot of those guys. And it comes with a very interesting skill set, and Carl Parisian, obviously, his reputation precedes him with the judo master that he is. The problem is that what is a win over a guy, like you said, who's never fought in the welterweight division before, particularly a guy who has a bit of a spotty record. He's been KO'd by Philip Baroni. His winner, Anderson Silva, he was getting annihilated before that, the takedown and the heel hook, the scissors takedown. In any event, no, it doesn't really put him any closer to a title shot. If he loses, it puts him that much further, though. So this is basically a must-win for Caro. That being said, the one positive thing about MMA, and particularly Caro's skill set, is that if you can win dramatically, particularly of a named opponent, Chonin isn't ranked highly in the welterweight division, but people know who he is. That's why they brought him over. If you can win over that guy, stop him viciously, that'll do big things for you. And that'll kind of expedite his search for the belt. So in terms of beating a ranked opponent, no. But if he can win without going to a decision, if he can stop Rio Chonin, I think that says a lot.
At the top of our conversation, you spoke about Frankie Edgar and Spencer Fisher, briefly touched on it. Many people are predicting this to be the fight of the night. Two guys who in 2007 have provided probably two of the best fights, especially in the lightweight division. Spencer Fisher against Sam Stout, Edgar against Tyson Griffin. I mean, does this have all the makings of a fight of the night? And who are you favoring in this one?
This is a tough one. This does have the makings of a fight of the night. This is a perfect style matchup for the lightweight division. You've got Frankie Edgar, undefeated, unheralded guy, with some amazing wins. I'm telling you, a jiu-jitsu phenom in Mark Bocek. To beat that guy is no small task. And then when he beat Tyson Griffin before that, another win that people should look at on his resume, is he beat Davidas Torres-Avicius. And if you don't know that name, it's your own fault, because that guy is a vicious, vicious animal. And Edgar beat him, too. Edgar is no joke, and he definitely deserves to be where he is. His skill set still bothers me a little bit. I know guys who grapple with him in pure grappling tournaments, and now they're very, 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 very good jiu-jitsu guys. And Edgar admits that jiu-jitsu is not his strong point, and he was submitted. Again, MMA, very different animal, but it's worth noting that his jiu-jitsu is still very green. On the other hand, you have Spencer Fisher, a guy who went to Thailand and has been training with the Miletic team for years. Incredibly good MMA striking, tough guy. Ferocious competitor, highlight reel full of knockouts, but he has admitted openly on mic that his wrestling really isn't that good. It's serviceable, but it's not good. So who's going to win? The wrestler with, you know, really, really good boxing and Frankie Edgar, or the Muay Thai striker with great submissions off his back but bad wrestling? So it's going to be this huge back and forth. I expect Edgar, you know, he's not just a good wrestler, I mean, he's an elite-level wrestler, and as good as his wrestling is, I think that's going to carry him into the advantages. But, you know, you can never, ever count out Spencer Fisher, particularly in the late rounds. I mean, he is hard to put away. And, you know, he can beat you off his back. He triangled Thiago Alves, and he knocked out Matt Wyman with a flying knee. So, slight edge to Edgar, but again, this should be no surprise if Spencer Fisher pulls out one here.
If Sean Sherk does get stripped of his title and the BJ Penn Joe Stevenson match in January becomes an actual, you know, official lightweight title fight, do any of these guys deserve to be the next in line if they win on Saturday?
It's hard to say. I think Edgar, if he wins here, especially against a guy like Spencer Fisher, he should get another one. And the problem with Fisher is that while he has the win over Stout, that's coming off the loss to Hermes Franca. And he was stopped by Hermes Franca, too, who was, you know, supposed to not have any good hands and good power, but not really sort of technical boxing. And he lost. And that was a big setback. I think short of that, if he had beaten Hermes Franca and he had defeated Sam Stout, then, yeah, I would say that's enough of a cumulative effort to get a title shot. In this particular instance, no. Moreover, Joe Daddy had to walk through a number of opponents to get there. And while Edgar has done that, he's still – Spencer Fisher's good. Maybe you can make a case for Edgar. I don't know. But certainly not for Spencer Fisher. I think, for me, I'd like to see at least one more win for both guys to sort of round out their experience. And if they're going to be fighting BJ Penn, I would think that who I believe will beat Stevenson, you would think that you want as much experience as possible before you take on that guy.
The other fight that is guaranteed to make it on the televised portion of the event is Joe Dirksen against Ed Herman. Dirksen, a late replacement for the injured or the oft-injured David Terrell. Last time we saw Joe Dirksen, he was fighting in the WEC, losing to Paulo Filho, who is probably regarded as the number two middleweight in the world right now, maybe even number one, depending on who you ask. When the WEC was purchased by Zuffa, they said no fighters would be going from WEC to UFC back and forth, and now they've seemingly done it with Dirksen, who had previously fought in the UFC before his debut in WEC. Why is he fighting on this card? Is this just a case of, you know, they needed a guy to step in, a pretty, you know, big opponent? He's from the Northeast, or is he now a full-time UFC fighter? What are you hearing?
I suspect this is a temporary thing, even if he wins. I mean, if he wins, he might get another go at it, but they'll probably match up with somebody big time, and I'm like, he'll probably just get smashed. I mean, Joe Dirksen's a really interesting guy, very, very well-rounded. A lot of people sleep on him, which I don't quite understand. If you look at his losses, they don't come to slouches, hardly ever. They come, and he's beaten really good guys, too. He has a very well-rounded skill set, particularly off his back, and as a good wrestler, and I would say decent striking, too. He also, for folks who don't know, he triangled Ed Herman a few years ago. Now, I think they're bringing him for a couple of reasons. One is he's available and always puts on a good fight. But two, Herman's skill level has gone up while Dirksen's, I won't say skill level has gone down, but certainly his, I'm not sure his best days are in front of him as a fighter. So these fighters are now meeting at a juncture where the matchup is significantly more competitive. And it's just a good fit. I think the guys in the WEC probably want to stay where they are because they can get a little more attention that way. But if the UFC comes calling, it's kind of like you go, well, you win or you lose. So, but I think that's the situation going on here.
What do you make of Ed Herman? I mean, he lost his first two UFC fights, one to Kendall Grove in the Ultimate Fighter 3 finale, the next one to the tough killer, Jason McDonald. Then he wins against Chris Price and Scott Smith. So I guess this is probably his biggest opponent, not sleeping on Smith or Price, but, you know, since the loss to Jason McDonald, Joe Dirksen. And like you said, he can avenge his loss to him. What do you make of him? I mean, this is a guy who had a lot of expectations saddled onto his shoulders when he was on the show. A lot of people thought he would actually come out the winner of Tough 3, and now he hasn't seemed to have lived up to that expectations or those expectations.
Yeah, that's probably my view on Herman is, at least from what I've seen, and I saw many of his fights prior to him joining the UFC. It's still kind of the same skill set. He can win so long as the guy he's fighting isn't as good as jiu-jitsu or wrestling as him. In that case, he can win. If the guy has good takedown defense and really good submissions as well and good submission defense and most importantly, good strikes, particularly with the boxing, and a guy who's a good kickboxer, not just a good boxer, but a guy who's a good kickboxer. In other words, a guy who's well-rounded, who can match him anywhere, he wins. I mean, his wrestling is really, really good, and his submissions are slick, but if you've got an antidote for that, he doesn't have much else in the tank. At least my experience, that's what I've seen. And we're talking about the professional level here. We're not talking about the guy at the local average gym. That's my impression of him. And the problem is even though Dirksen has been on a bit of a slide, he's got both of those. So the question I think it will come down to is who can box out on the feet, and then the way for Herman is to win is going to be, in my view, I seriously doubt he's going to submit Dirksen, but what he probably is going to try and do is ground and pound on top. I think that's going to be his game plan. And so if Dirksen can defend the takedown, and he defended Paulo Filho's takedowns very, very well. I mean, Filho didn't win by submission or armbar. He won by TKO. So if Herman can get him on his back, he has Dan's decent chance of winning. Short of that, I think it's going to be Dirksen's night.
All right, let's talk about a guy that you seem to be very excited about, Akihiro Gono, making his UFC debut, longtime Pancrase and Pride veteran, going up against Hamdan McCrory. I mean, this for hardcore MMA fans is a great, great fight. McCrory coming off a pretty big win last time we saw him. For fans that don't know, first off, what can you tell us about Akihiro Gono? What should they expect from him?
Akihiro Gono is an incredible guy. He has been fighting Vale Tudo and then MMA since 1994. When Tam Dan was, I think, in kindergarten, this guy was fighting professional high-level fights. That should tell you something about his experience. He has fought the best of the best and defeated a lot of them. He has a vicious win over Ivan Salivary, and Ivan Salivary is no joke. Ivan Salivary triangled Joe Riggs and beat Tony the Freak Fricklin. I mean, he's a very well-rounded guy, and for him to lose to a spinning back kick that hit him in the liver, I mean, Gono is nobody to joke. But he's lost a little bit, too. He's hard to finish. He's faced the best of the best. He beat Marilla Ninjahua, but he lost to his brother, Mauricio. So, granted, it's a different weight class. So what I would say is that the top of the top guys give him a lot of trouble. The problem with McCrory in terms of a style matchup is that, A, McCrory is very long, so if he can keep his limbs in his face and keep him at a distance, that'll neutralize a lot of Gono's main advantage, which is striking. But more interestingly, I spoke to Tam Dan about a week ago. This is a guy who has not learned the meaning of fear yet. I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it is what it is. He has only been training MMA for a year and a half and been fighting for a year, 8-0, undefeated, triangled Pete Spratt after taking a beating for about a round and a half, which says that he has composure under fire. It's an interesting style matchup. He is not giving Gono any bit of, I mean, he's giving him respect as a fighter, but in terms of his opponent, he's not the least bit intimidated. And I think until someone beats it into him or submits him or knocks him out, Tam Dan is going to come out and fight ferociously. And so if Gono is taking him lightly, which sometimes a seasoned vet might do, this could be upset city, which would be very, very interesting. I think Gono should win. He has all the reasons to win. But McCrory is not going to let him slide for an instant, and that could be a very, very compelling fight.
Yeah, when McCrory comes on after his fights, puts on the glasses, kind of channeling the same type of aura of Luke Kumo, who has surprised a lot of people in his rise in the UFC. Gono, McCrory, who are you liking in this one when it comes down to it?
It's hard to root against a guy like Gono, particularly with the level of competition he's faced. I mean, McCrory's 8-0, and Pete Spratt is, I mean, he can leg kick you so hard, he can dislocate your hip. Just ask Robbie Lawler. So to take a beating from that guy and then come back and triangle him, it is no small feat, despite the fact that Spratt's jiu-jitsu is dubious. What I would say, though, is it's hard to root against a guy like Gono in this. Gono has said he's been looking at tape of McCrory, and McCrory really hasn't fought the kind of guys that Gono has. And Gono has, there's nothing that McCrory is going to show him that Gono hasn't seen. And so for those reasons, it's hard for me to root against a guy like Gono, who is tough, who can get on the inside on McCrory, and then once on the ground, I would say has significantly better skill, even though neither are necessarily Abu Dhabi world beaters.
I'm an unabashed Joe Lozon fan going up against Jason Reinhardt. Reinhardt, which seems to be maybe the case with this entire card for just, the casual MMA fan, especially that many of those might come to this event since it's the first time in a while in the Northeast, is a guy who's making his UFC debut 18-0 against J-Lo, who, the Ultimate Fighter 5, a lot of people were expecting him to come out on top, especially coming after his pretty shocking knockout of the coach on that season, Jens Pulver. Who are you liking in this battle of 155ers?
I'm guessing this one is going to be a beating in Joe Lozon's favor. I don't expect this one to leave the first, certainly not the second round. I cannot see it happening. Jason Reinhardt is obviously no slouch, and he deserves his UFC debut, and I'm happy for him. He's also 38 and hasn't faced anybody nearly of the competition of Joe Lozon. He's 18-0, but he's 18-0 against guys Joe Lozon would murder. I mean, truly murder if you had the option. I mean, these are not guys who, these are king of the cage level guys. These are not UFC level guys. And Lazone, who not only is training full time, but training full time with BJ Penn. I can't imagine, even in a small amount of time, how much his skill set has probably improved. Again, Reinhardt deserves to be where he is, and I wish him best of luck, but I would be shocked to learn that Lazone, who is not only a vicious grappler, I mean, you got to understand, before Joe Lazone ever went on the MMA, he was known on the East Coast circuits and the West Coast, in fact, for being an aggressive, high-level submission grappler. I mean, he's not any kind of joke, and he's faced really tough guys, even once fights where he's lost before. And also, lastly, Reinhardt walks around at the low 150s. Joe Lazone has to cut to get there. I cannot possibly see any scenario where Joe Lazone would lose here.
All right, Luke, pretty much the main card, the main fights on the card. There are a couple of others. Chris Lytle going up against Thiago Alves. Also, Marcus Aurelio going up against Luke Codillo. Those two ones, not so much to expect from them. Guys who are trying to create a name for themselves within the UFC. Chris Lytle, a lot of people might know him from the reality show. Alves is coming off a couple of big wins. Are you expecting anything big from those two fights?
I expect Aurelio to walk through Codillo. I mean, Aurelio has been in a bit of a skid here, but he's been in a skid against, you know, Mitsuhiro Ishida and Gomi and Clay Guida, three very good guys in the sport of mixed martial arts, and none of them, were destroying him. So what the UFC did was they set him up with a guy named Luke Caudillo. Again, no, nothing to sneeze at, but a guy who's had a little bit of problem with talented submission guys, and doesn't get a whole lot more talented in terms of very technical jiu-jitsu than the guy from American Top Team, Maximus, Marcus Aurelio. So Aurelio should walk through him. But I would disagree with you slightly. I would say Lytle versus Alves has also the potential to be fight of the night. I mean, Chris Lytle is a bit of a counterfighter, but his fight with Robbie Lawler was excellent, and Chris Lytle is an excellent grappler. Thiago Alves is a predator. This fight has very interesting. There's nothing that Thiago Alves is going to show Chris Lytle that he hasn't seen before either. I give the edge to Alves because of athleticism and aggression, but that fight could also turn out to be a very technical, very interesting fight, either on the feet or on the ground.
All right, well, that does it then for UFC 78. The entire card we covered with the help of Luke Thomas of BloodyElbow.com. You can read all the great material up there on his site, not only from him, but a whole host of other MMA writers. And I actually really enjoyed this. Hopefully we can make this maybe a monthly event on JerryPark.com to have you preview the fights, because definitely a talented fellow when it comes to the cage or the ring. Luke, thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy the show this Saturday night.
Likewise, and thanks for having me.